Thanks so much for tuning into this podcast, produced at KUT Radio in Austin, Texas. For more information on KUT programs and to support the station, go to KUT.org. And thanks again. So tonight, we are discussing weddings. Lord Byron once wrote, "I have great hopes that we shall love each other all our lives as much as if we had never been married at all."
Oh, so sad.
But weddings are a lot of fun, and they do have a lot of pitfalls as well. Here with me to discuss weddings in all their glory, we have wedding photographer Corey Ryan. Welcome. The lovely and amazing writer, meditator, and wedding officiant Spike Gillespie. Welcome. Couples therapist, Steve Milan. Would I say couples therapist? Is that correct? Okay. And Anthony Canforti, wedding DJ extraordinaire, here on the very end. Before we get to some of the ins and outs and do's and don'ts, I'd like to know how each of you kind of came to this profession, you know, came to weddings as your foray. Corey, let's start with you. How'd you get into wedding photography?
I actually went to school for film and video production in North Carolina, and actually moved here to be an indie filmmaker back in 99. That didn't work out. I got a burnout and laid off in the bubble, and just decided I was going freelance. So I started out as a wedding videographer. And about the time I got bored, burnout on video, I transitioned into photography and already had a ton of experience under my belt with weddings and quick transition. I love it and I've never looked back.
And what's your favorite part about doing weddings?
Honestly, it's the relationships. I come from, I'm an only child and my parents are divorced. But it's the coolest thing, being like a part of somebody's family for the day, seeing the insides and the outs, and knowing that what you're doing, like those photos you are taking, are family heirlooms that they will have for the rest of their lives. And it's not a lot of people get to do that, and it's special.
And I think, you know, as a couple, you feel that everybody is kind of part of this family that's making this all happen. So it's refreshing to hear that you also feel like you're kind of a part of their family too. Spike, how did you get into it?
So in 2004, I was visiting my family in South Jersey, and as I always do on the rare occasions I go back, I buried myself in reading the newspaper so I wouldn't engage in family dynamics. And because of that, I stumbled across this article in the New York Times about a growing need for wedding officiants, because more and more couples either they didn't want religion, or they wanted to get married under a tree, or they were same-sex, all sorts of reasons. And I was already a public speaker and a writer, and I thought, well, this will be fun. And so I thought about it for a couple of years, and then I gave it a shot with some friends were my guinea pigs, and I had a really great time with it. So I started doing, I just kind of threw myself in. I was trained by Kim Isom, who owns Unbridled. I'm sure a lot of you know Unbridled, the dress store. And it was my side gig from 2006 till 2010, and then in 2010, my last regular writing job that paid me a regular paycheck dried up. The internet kind of ruined everything for writers financially. And so I just said, screw it, I'm gonna be a full-time wedding officiant. And I went from doing about 30 or 40 a year to now I do about 150 weddings per year.
And you have quite a few stories, which we're going to get into in just a little bit. Steve, how did you get into couples? What kind of attracted you to that dynamic?
Well, you know, I'm a recovering CPA, and I had to find something else. So I've been working as a therapist for about 15, 20 years now. And initially I started working, as all therapists do, with women, because there's so many more of them coming to therapy. And over time, it transitioned in about 6 months period. It transitioned from 80% men to 80% women. I mean, 80% women to 80% men. And of course, the people that get the men into therapy are the women. So it makes it a lot easier when she brings him, and that would be couples therapy. So that's how that began. And now I'm kind of just trying to help them figure out how to talk to each other, and in this case, trying to help them figure out how to plan weddings and live through them.
And what surprises you most about, you know, the idea of going to a wedding is kind of like the first step sometimes in a relationship. Are you ever kind of like, how did you get there? How did you get to that point?
When people walk into my office, I'm like, how did you get here? You know? No, you know, I have recently gone through a little bit of training with Spike, and I'm going to be a wedding officiant as well. And part of that is just this inspiring place. You know, I really want to do it just because it's so inspiring to sit in the presence of people that love the way that people are getting married love. And I see enough of the painful stuff and some of the hopeful stuff, but I just thought, yeah, I want to be part of this piece that really can see the hope and the dream and be part of kind of tying that knot. So it's sweet.
Tell us a little bit, Anthony. You're relatively recent to the DJ gig, the wedding DJ gig, only 3 years, right?
In a way. I've been DJing since before 2000, but in terms of weddings, since about 2010, yeah.
What attracted you to doing weddings?
To be honest, the whole production, seeing all the details come together, it's much more gratifying to play a nice reception and play a variety of music rather than being stuck in a dark club downtown where it's just to the wall the entire night, you know? So that's one thing. Another is, you know, DJs for weddings, there's far fewer than there are, say, photographers or other types of vendors. So with the talent that I felt that I had nurtured, I felt I'd be able to stand out a little bit more and do a good job of doing that.
Mm-hmm. So before we get into kind of like, you know, the history of how weddings kind of come together, where are we with weddings right now? You know, how has blogging, how has things like, you know, social media, Pinterest, how do they affect the way that you, you know, meet a couple and come to a couple?
Oh, I was going to go a different angle with that.
Go ahead.
But I do want to put, there's a really hilarious video at The Onion where there's this couple, of course they're actors, but we'll say they're a couple, and they're the most narcissistic couple of all time, and they really are the epitome of like the competitive engaged couple. It's like very Portlandia, you know, we're gonna have the guests are gonna bicycle over to a Vietnamese sandwich bar and we're gonna have mason jars with candles in them and, you know, and the internet, the good side is you can see all these DIY things that you can do which can save you money unless you flip over to the other side where you're DIYing everything, like you're hand crocheting outfits for everybody's dogs that are invited. And like it can, the DIY thing can get really expensive really quickly. But for me, social media and, you know, having a, my overhead for my business is zero. My office is Cherrywood Cafe. I work out of my house. I barter with my webmaster. I do my own blog because I'm a writer. So my expenses are very small. I always have a new car. I mean, I trade out cars every few years. That's my treat because I drive a crazy number of miles every year to get to weddings. But the internet, it just brings people to you and they can see your video and they can read your, I think ratings and reviews are probably the biggest thing. If you look at my reviews online, I have people read my reviews and say, that is not you. Like, who is this? People act like I can cure cancer and deliver babies because they're all in honeymoon head when they write their review. They're just like, wow, what happened? She did that for us. And I'm just, okay, if you want to feel that way about that.
So I've watched a couple of her weddings. I mean, I don't see it.
You're not impressed, yeah.
But there is a lot of, you know, I think, Steve, you are the trained therapist, but I think in a way, each of you kind of has to walk that line a little bit, you know? You're really kind of negotiating between two sides and coming to the couple with all these expectations involved. How do you negotiate some of those things? What has happened in the past when a couple, say, comes to you and says, I really want all my photos to be, like, hipstamatic, you know? I mean,
hire your uncle to use his iPhone. I haven't gotten that request yet, thank God. I do think that
there's so much information about wedding vendors online, like in terms of their blogs and their About Me on their website and their Pinterest and all this stuff, that I think by the time couples get to the point of wanting to meet with you or, you know, reaching out, they already have a pretty good idea about who they like. So I feel like most of the time, by the time you're meeting with somebody, they're pretty serious. Just, you know, it's the world of sharing online. And, you know, most of my couples will add me on Facebook, and, you know, it's easy to know a lot about somebody. And you got to keep your reviews all 5 stars.
Can I piggyback for a second there? So my website, which is spikegillespie.com, also customhitches.com, custom hitches weddings, excuse me. But mine used to be pretty generic, and what made it really stand out was it didn't have a tinkly heart that followed the cursor with Casio music in the background. That was like all you had to do to stand out among Austin wedding officiants was not be completely cheesy, right? But I kept it pretty generic, like, hey, I'd love to do your wedding, that'd be nice. And then I realized that I could weed out a lot of the people that I don't want to work with by putting in stuff like, I heart homos, you know, like, I want to do your gay wedding, or, you know, hardcore traditional Christians who want Paco Bell Canon and, you know, 20 Bible verses, probably you want to go somewhere else. And my one line that seems to net me the most people, I've got this little section where I say, maybe you're not religious, but your parents are going to flip out unless you throw them a holy bone. I can do that. Holy bone comes up in so many emails, and it's right there on the website. So I don't have to deal with the people that I don't want to deal with. I love the internet.
Steve, do you have to really kind of negotiate and teach a couple how to negotiate between two families, especially when it comes to religion? That seems like a big thing.
Yeah, they... I just send them to Spike, really, and she solves the whole religion thing. No, I think most couples, they're not worried tremendously within themselves about the religion. It really is between the couple and kind of more the family member. I think in general, expectations around the wedding vary significantly within the couple. And I was thinking about this, you know, when I was a kid, as a guy, I would dream of, you know, dribbling down the court in 5-4-3-2 and hit the winning shot of the championship. But my sister was dreaming of walking down the aisle. And that never occurred to me, actually, you know, until I was getting married. And I was like, why are you focused on this? You know, what's the deal? But it's just like, you know, winning the championship. You know, that you dream about it the whole time. So that's the big differentiation within the couples, is kind of how much energy do we put into this, really.
Yeah, exactly. And Anthony, what types of conversations do you kind of see that are really difficult when people come to you with requests?
Well, you know, there's definitely, we were talking about negotiations, and I feel a lot of couples feel like they have to please everyone that night, when really it's their night. So we try to get out of them what they really want the night to be and go from there. You know, if your mother's going to, you know, blow a gasket because we don't play Lionel Richie or something like that, we should probably play Lionel Richie, and we will, and that's fine. But we're not going to let someone else overtake your night. We want it to be your vision, your special night, and what you really want to get out of it. If you're not having fun, your guests aren't having fun. They can see it on your face. And so we really need, you know, our clients, our couple, the bride and groom, our first and foremost priority is to get them out on the dance floor, get them, you know, shaking their booty, having a good time, and everybody else will be out there. Like I say to all my couples, if the bride's out there, your bridesmaids are going to be out there. If the bridesmaids are out there, their dates are going to be out there. So that's really sort of... you know, listening to what they want versus, oh, my mother gave me a list of 20 songs. And it sort of also ties into your guests as well. You know, a lot of a popular thing now to do is on the RSVB cards, what song would you like to hear? A lot of times the guests are going to reply with what their first dance was, or, you know, a slow, sappy song, something that was important to them, which is great if it's a quality song. But we don't want to be playing 30 slow dance songs in a row at your reception when you want to have a party. So sort of that negotiation between what they expect, what will make their guests have a good time, and what's going to allow them to have a good time as well.
And I will say that, you know, conflict increases exponentially when the couple is not paying themselves. I've seen it time and time and time again. Sometimes, you know, moms will want to have their wedding day that they never had through their daughters. And I think it's just really important that couples are having those conversations with their parents about what's really important to them, and just make it really clear in a nice way that, you know, you want this to be a special event for them as well, but, you know, these are the priorities for you, and this is, just don't get bullied around. I've seen, you know, brides with flowers that they hate because their mom insisted that sunflowers were not appropriate, you know. And it's kind of sad, so you gotta stand up for yourself a little bit too.
And on the flip side of that, you know, we've seen so much in these reality shows, like the idea of the bridezilla. So how do you kind of, how do you talk about how to assert yourself and not kind of represent that bridezilla? You know, how do you have, Spike, you talked about the power of the bride, and the bride needs to know how powerful she is in a situation. How does she assert that without being the bridezilla?
When I initially meet clients, and it's most often for me, it'll be the religious thing. Like, our families are, one family will be like religious nutcases. And I will just, what I really want to say, and depending on the vibe I get from them, I might just, I don't flat out say, but what I'm thinking is, y'all, if you're really adults and you're really getting married, you need to know how the hell to tell your parents to talk to the hand, you know, and just... But they might come back with, but if we don't acquiesce on some of these points, we will have hell to pay for the rest of our life. I'm a little different in that when my family said to me, like, you can change or you can walk away, I just got in the car and I left. So I have to remember that there are a lot of people that have these connections to their family. I'll give you an example. I did a wedding recently where, I think it was a $90,000 wedding. It was... I don't do a lot of those. But the dad, he got veto power over the content of the wedding ceremony. And there was a joke that the couple wanted me to put in that I put in. And then they wrote and they're like, Dad doesn't like it, gotta take it out. And when I'm going into a situation like that, I'm like, my punk rocker wants to just say, you know. But I have to remember that they have their own family dynamic. And in that particular wedding, so like the angel and the devil as I'm driving there to the wedding, and I'm just, or to the rehearsal, and I'm thinking, I can either like just, I can approach this one of two ways when I meet the dad. I can just kind of be like, yeah. Or I can suck up to him. And because I'm a middle child, I can do both of those roles. So I got there and I kind of sussed out the way that they were acting. And she was a complete daddy's girl. She just loved her daddy. She was the only daughter. And I was like, I'll just suck up to the guy. And before you know it, we were having a surface conversation. And he was paying my bill too. Yeah. So it all worked out. But it's hard to know when they're telling you that their parents are freaking out or what the power is. I would say this. I sometimes will have, very rarely, but sometimes will have a bride, not so much the grooms, try to push me. Like, well, we don't really, like, blah, blah, blah. And I'm really fortunate now that I get so many requests. I'm like, I'm sorry. Perhaps you'd like to find another... Yeah, wedding officiant, you know? And that usually pulls people in the line. But again, I'm giving the exceptions because the exceptions are always much more fun to hear about than the actual. 99.9% of my clients are just very fun and cool and chilled out, you know? Yeah.
But it brings up this really great point, which is, you know, how do you have this, share this very intimate space with people, yet at the same time remain professional and keep a boundary up between, you know, I'm doing my job. I know this is your life moment, but I have to do my job. And Corey, you have a lot of, you know, things in your contract. And I know, Anthony, we talked about, you know, how you really need to separate yourself and create a boundary there. What have been some experiences?
I'm not great at creating boundaries. I am very professional on the job. But I think a photographer is different than any other vendor because they are literally with you in your bra and underwear, putting your dress on, like I've seen it all, till the end of the day when you exit. And often your bridal session and your engagement session, and then a year after your wedding while we make your album. I mean, we have a very, very, very lengthy relationship. One of the things I do, I have a wedding day questionnaire I have all my couples fill out, and one of the questions on there is, are there any interesting family dynamics, divorces, embarrassing things I should know? And when I show up, I already sort of know the deal. I know who's divorced from who. They're not going to be put in the same photo. I know who doesn't want to be beside so-and-so. I've got the parent's name memorized. So it's actually my job to really fit into the family and to, you know, be professional, because you got to be kind of bossy too. You know, hey, you know, I need you over here now. We're doing this photo, whatever. But I have to be, I mean, I'm sort of part of the family for a day, and in a way that I think is a little bit different than other vendors. Yeah.
Anthony, what do you think?
Well, we're not in the dressing room like Corey is, you know, watching the bride and groom get dressed, but we really have more of a connection with the guests at the reception. So our boundaries are more in relation to them. You know, the bride and groom, the hard part's over, they're married, they're ready to just let loose, have a party. Meanwhile, the guests are pounding Jaeger bombs and getting totally sloshed and want to have a good time too. And that's great. That's fantastic. But, you know, with the point where they start to get a little sloppy and make demands, and to them it's a party, to us it's our job. So it's up to us to remain professional. You know, if any incidents do take place, of course we try to remain as professional as possible. Not, you know, we're not going to get into fisticuffs and end your wedding. Well, I mean, Spike might want us to, but yeah, exactly. That's the Jersey part coming out. So we definitely have to set up boundaries. You know, if a guest is being a little too belligerent, you know, sort of approach it from a professional standpoint and how can we diffuse the situation rather than let it get out of hand. That being said, of course, there are times when things do get out of hand. And, you know, you have to let someone else know to maybe handle the situation, because we're busy. We're behind that table. We're playing music. We're trying to keep the dance floor connected to us. You know, one of the greatest things that we, or one of our greatest tools is reading the dance floor and seeing what people are dancing to keep the party going. So if our attention is distracted by, you know, a belligerent guest or a drunk guest, then that sort of takes away from the, you know, product that we can offer. So that's just sort of one of the ways that boundaries need to be set. And it's, I'm sorry to have to say it, but, you know, it doesn't happen a whole lot. Sometimes it does. Most of the time, everybody just has a good time and wants to hear Journey or what have you. You know, it's a fun time, so.
And Spike, you wanted to add something?
The people that I have to keep boundaries with, I want to just click on a hyperlink real quick and say, at the front end, I want not so many boundaries when I'm interviewing clients. So I'm always trying to establish common ground. That's another middle child thing. And one time I met this couple early on in my career where they said, it's our first marriage for both of us. And I have foot and mouth disease, and I'm like, what can I say back that relates to that? So I said, first marriages are like pancakes. You always throw the first one away. And then, like, as it was coming out of my mouth, I'm like, no, come back. So, like, I had that. I need my own set of boundaries, like, in my head. But the boundaries that I feel like I most often have to use, and again, this is a very small, small percentage, but there are the holy roller uncles and the pushy planners. And the planners, Cecily likes to say, are beware of the wedding planner who is the best friend of the bride who thought it would be fun to try planning. Like, I could just fucking throttle those people. I had a wedding planner at a venue. When I got to the rehearsal, she had given everybody a stack of papers, including the grandparents. And she was saying to the couples, now, the intro song is... it was Peter Gabriel's version of Stephen Merritt's Book of Love. Now you're gonna, when you hear the line, I want you to step off. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, do you think they're gonna be, she was really a bitch, and I really got in her face. I could tell, spend an entire hour telling that story. Okay, so I have to make boundaries with those people because I've done 600 weddings and they've done one. Dumbass DJs. This is why I want Anthony at every wedding, because he is so awesome. I cannot tell you the number of stupid microphone setups. Like, hey, I brought you a Mr. Microphone. Like, here's your karaoke mic. I hate that. And then the holy roller uncles are the ones that will come up. This happened the other day at Mercury Hall. This guy comes up. He's like, Spuck, what are your credentials? What are your credentials? And I'm like, you know what? Screw you. Because he's pretending to joke, but he's challenging me because I'm a woman. It wasn't a religious ceremony. And he's like, you know, God and Texas do not approve of this wedding. And so I used to let these narcissistic blowhard uncles engage me. And often they just want to talk. They want to proselytize. Now I'm just like, they're like, what church do you belong to? And I just say, the internet. And then I walk, and I just walk away. Because you need boundaries. Like, I'm not hired to go kiss Uncle Dickwad's ass. I'm there to do my job and then go gently into the good night.
Go riding off into the sunset.
I could speak a little bit about boundaries. It's kind of what I work with daily. And I, you know, have a mad respect for these guys, because what we're talking about is you're going to the situation where family dynamics are going to, like, reverberate more than ever before on what is supposed to be the most important day of your life. I mean, even in my 50s, I go home and I am totally traumatized by being around my family. I become 5 years old again. I'm a therapist for 20 years, and I still act like a 5-year-old when I'm around my family. So now multiply that by being the most important day of your life, and then your parents think it's the most important day of their lives, and then you've got the friend who wants to be the wedding planner, who it's the most important thing she's done in a little while, at least, and it's all charged, right? Like, we're gonna all be 3-year-olds, and these guys have to corral them into some level of functioning that will look really good in the pictures at the end. So there's a lot going on here, you know. So it's necessary, really, the boundaries that they're talking about establishing are necessary to keep people acting like adults, you know, instead of being kind of...
Oh, and there's the alcohol, too.
Oh, there's alcohol. Yes. And let's talk about family dynamics and alcohol. No, it's not.
Well, before we move on to questions, you know, we did come out to give some advice, how to have a no BS wedding, right? So why don't each of you give your two or three notes on how to make that happen? Anthony, we'll start with you.
Sure. Let's think real quick. To have a no BS wedding, first of all, go along with what you'd like to do as the couple. Like I spoke about earlier, don't try to please everyone because it's not possible. Second of all, trust your vendors. Trust your officiant, trust your photographer, trust your DJ, maybe. Trust your caterer. They are professionals. They've been doing this, you know, quite a time. And part of what you're paying them for, because we don't charge a small sum, it is your wedding day, is their knowledge and experience of what they've seen in the past. So if, for instance, you know, you want to place your DJ in a certain position, or you want a certain song played at a certain time, you want a certain photo taken at a certain time, if the vendor kindly directs you in another direction, say, well, what about this? Maybe let's think about this for a little while. Trust them. You know, we're not trying to be prima donnas and direct your wedding for you. We're not trying to take control and have any kind of ulterior motives. We want what's best for you. We want your day to be awesome and epic. So Corey said you'll go online and write that 5-star review. That's what we'd like to do. We want you to be happy. So that would be my advice.
Steve, what do you think?
Well, I think it kind of begins with who you choose. You know, you might want to choose somebody that you get along with, that you can at least get through the wedding planning process with. Maybe the wedding day. You might want to know a little bit about each other's family issues before you start, so the partner will also know to, you know, bow down to the father or mother, whoever it is. But also, because it's so charged, and, you know, maybe it's more charged for one partner than another. Spike gave me a hard time when I said that women are more invested in weddings than men, but let's just go with the stereotype for a moment. And guys might want to do things like when I went to this one wedding with Spike. He was most focused on hearing during the wedding photos afterwards when they were taking the picture with the
Canon wedding.
Yes. the picture with the license. He was kind of there, and she was there, and they snapped the picture, and then his friend goes, yeah, the Rangers have a no-hitter going into the seventh inning, and he was more focused on that. That was the most emotion I saw from this guy, you know? It's a $90,000 wedding, right? 100, we think, somewhere?
The flowers were $20,000 for that one.
Yeah,
that
okay. That, yeah. So, but this is going on. This woman, the wife, bride is, you know, totally about the, and she didn't even notice, happily, because Spike had engaged her about the next photo. But he was more about Yu Darvish, who was throwing a no-hitter for the Texas Rangers, or whoever it was. You know the date, right? Yeah. Watch him. If you're marrying him, he's not going to be there either. So the other part is just about presence, you know? Not TS, the CE, presence. Like, you might really want to be there. There's something about events that kind of takes us out of our bodies, you know, like we're over here and we don't know what our experience is. So really working with just really breathing and being present and really feeling what the heck's going on here and knowing and going in that this is something that you're going to want to turn to each other for. It's really sweet when you see a bride and groom turn to each other when they're feeling all of the stressors as well as all the pleasures of being up there.
Spike, what's your advice?
I got a few bullet points. Backyard weddings are totally bitchin'. My second wedding, I am the twice divorced wedding officiant, and my second wedding, the reception was a few days later, but we did a potluck. We had about 300 people. The whole thing cost under $1,000. It was awesome. Backyard weddings are great. Number two, it is okay to decide not to get married. I know that hurts my business. Well, I get to keep the deposit. But no, seriously though, people get really ramped up. It's like, we gotta do this, that was my first wedding. Like that, they were both not the best ideas, but the first one could have totally been avoided. But I'm like, no, we committed to this. We've known each other 6 weeks, we're in it. So you don't have to get married. And I actually have couples sometimes contact me and either they say, you know what, we scrapped the big wedding, we're eloping, or you know what, we're really not ready yet. And I send note, that doesn't happen very often, but when it does, I think they're a little bit embarrassed to tell me, and I always say, congratulations. That is so cool that you thought this through now, because you can get really wound up. At the actual wedding, I tell my couples the same thing every time. I say, you have one job with three parts. Breathe, don't lock your knees, and feel the love. I've got everything in my book. If you forget your rings, I wear extra rings. If you forget your license, I've got a couple I'm meeting with Friday, they forgot their license, no problem. Focus on each other. I strongly suggest you take 10 minutes after the ceremony to be like, woo, high five, play the Wii or whatever, and eat something. You've just starved yourself for a year to fit in your size 6 dress. People are rushing at you with margaritas and champagne. Eat something. Talk to your little pushy wedding planner friend and have her have a plate of nachos waiting for you to eat, because you're going to pass out otherwise. And there's going to be some bad photos.
It's on to you, Corey.
I can't make you look less drunk. Sorry. So the first thing that both of these people have pretty much touched on but haven't exactly said is hire professionals, please. And this applies to every vendor. I'm like, there aren't any florists here, but maybe you could have your sister make the bouquets or something. But at the end of the day, at least pertaining to photography, you know,
you are spending a good chunk of change on this day, and it's really important to remember how hard our jobs are. This isn't some woe is me, oh, my life's so horrible. There's a lot of people that would love to have my job, but it's very challenging. You have to be an awesome portrait photographer. You have to be an awesome photojournalist. You have to be a food photographer for that awesome cake. And it's something that someone who is not experienced will freak out if it's a crazy lighting condition or it gets moved indoors, or you just never know what's going to happen on the wedding day. And a day after your wedding, all that you have are your photos. That's all that's left. Two, don't believe everything you read in wedding magazines because the budgets and the stuff they make up aren't right. And I know because I just got married last fall, so I've seen both sides of that equation. So the only way to make your budget work is to decide what your priorities are. Put the stuff at the top of your priority list with the most budget and work down from there. But make sure that you have what's most important to you at the top and be really clear when you're spending your money. Because as I learned, usually you go about $5,000 to $10,000 over budget. And I've had these conversations with couples over and over again, and it happened to me. And number three, and this is specifically photography related, is to consider a first look. Typically that involves seeing each other before the ceremony. That allows all your photos to be done before the ceremony, and then you can go straight to your party. A little bit of history on that. The reason that couples don't see each other, or the idea behind the tradition, was dates back to when weddings were actually an exchange of property and money, and families were paying families in exchange for, breeding daughters. And the tradition was started so that if the groom did not like what he saw, it would be too late. So that is really something to think about. Why are we doing this? And I know to a lot of couples, it's like, it's really important that we have that special moment, get to see each other. Like, any good photographer will honor the way you want it, no matter why you want it that way, and couples still do that. But I will also say you can have your special private moment not in front of 200 people and... Anyway, I'm just rambling now, but I think I made my point.
So I would really love to open it up to questions. I know a lot of you are probably anxious to ask our panel something. We have Daniel somewhere around here, right? Okay, perfect. And while he's coming around with the mic, Spike, I would love to hear about the unicorn mask.
Oh, awesome. Okay, so I tell couples that, to give an example of how flexible I am, that's a big selling point. I tell them about the couple, and if you're here tonight, I'm not making too much fun of you. They wanted me to perform their wedding, and they wanted me to wear a unicorn mask. But that's not the best part of the story. The best part of the story is they wanted to get married at 4:20. And anybody who wants to get married at 4:20 is going to be late for their own wedding. 100% guarantee. There's going to be a lot of Doritos for the guests to snack on. And also, that was a wedding where I had to refer, and I didn't know this was the name of some character in a cartoon or a graphic novel or something, but I had to refer to the groom throughout the ceremony as Big Daddy and the Lumberjack. And since we're just throwing anecdotes out, I did a wedding at Chapel Dulcinea where they bring their own boombox, and the exit song, and I love this because I was in the midst of my divorce, so I actually thoroughly appreciated this, but the exit song was Gloria Gaynor's I Will Survive.
I have one very quickly, because in full disclosure, I used to take wedding photos in Las Vegas at Little Chapel of Flowers. Anyone? No. And my favorite song I ever heard, my favorite wedding I ever photographed, was this guy who was maybe about 340 pounds-ish, strutted down the aisle toward his tiny little bride, who was Russian and who was the sweetest thing in the world, to I'm Too Sexy. So where is our first question? Daniel, anybody? Just raise your hand. Oh, right there.
Spike, this one's pretty much directly for you.
All right.
I've officiated 4 weddings now, 1 last year and 3 this year. I'm kind of curious how you got started, because right now for me it's all my friends and family asking me, and now there's more after I've done 4. Now there's 4 yeah. more asking, so I'm kind of curious what that story is.
I've now opened Spike Gillespie School of Wedding Officiants, and if you will pay me $2,000, I will tell you exactly how to do that. But a couple of, you know, just get ratings and reviews, build a website, put the word out there, and just let your friends know that you're up for it. And you know, maybe get some photos taken and put it together piece by piece. Because seriously, I mean, I really do train officiants and I really do charge money for it. But it is, you'll know if you're supposed to be doing it. Like, it feels really good to do it. And just to piggyback on something that Corey was saying, I will have people say to me, you're too expensive. I am less than 1% of the budget of most weddings. And I'm the only legal requirement. And I'm like, if you're going to spend $40,000 on Barbies with matching bridal dresses, but you can't pony up $500 for me, you know what? Don't tell me I'm too expensive. You're too cheap. Anyway, you can just, you know, I did it piece by piece. I had a little website put up. And then I have these SEO coaches. When I decided to turn it into a full-time job, I got serious about it as a business. I have a bookkeeper, I have an accountant, I have SEO coaches, and I take that really seriously. I had a couple hire me recently. The guy does SEO stuff for Dell, and he said one of the main reasons he hired me was any which way he did a search, I came up at the top. So people have different priorities.
And you know, that brings up something, which is the cost of things. And we talked a little bit about tipping. I mean, what do you guys see and recommend as far as, you know, tipping an officiant?
At least $500. No, my fee includes everything. Occasionally, I get a few bucks thrown at me. I never expect it. It's nice when it happens, but there is no negotiation. I have my fee, and it gets paid, and it's all taken care of before that day. So I just show up, I do my business, I sign the license and take it with me. And I think that's, I don't know how about you guys, if you get tipped, I don't.
Sometimes. I've noticed that I get tipped more often in high-end weddings with wedding planners. I think some planners recommend that you tip certain vendors certain amounts, but by no means is it expected. Of course, it's very, very nice.
It is very nice.
And I still have to edit your photos.
Anthony, you pretty much said the same thing too, right?
Right, yeah, definitely not expected. You know, we all charge a fee that we feel is reasonable. And so anything above that is your complete discretion and definitely appreciated. So that's that.
Mm-hmm. And don't forget to tip your therapist. On the way out.
That's always recommended. Another question? Oh, right in the back.
So besides your roles in photographing, DJing, and therapying these wedding ceremonies, what other purpose do these so-called weddings hold in American society and culture? And I'd like for each one of you to give an opinion on that.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll go, okay. Well, that's a great question. So, don't you love whenever people say that's a great question, they're thinking, what the fuck is that question about? Oh, well, thanks for asking that question this evening. You know, I'm gonna try to keep it short. I had 2 very short marriages. I just got out of a relationship where the biggest selling point for both of us was that we never wanted to get married. And that could be a big selling point. But this kind of ties in with the religious thing. A lot of people hire me because I'm completely happy to do a 100% secular wedding. You know, I have no trouble with that. It's my favorite kind is to do non-religious. But they're really, the older I get, the more I really believe in rites and rituals. So you really don't need a piece of paper. It's people who want to make this commitment. We were talking about this beforehand, and honor each other and do it in front of friends and celebrate their love. Same thing with funerals, you know, rite of passage. It's a milestone in people's lives. Yes, I do think a lot of people get really carried away and go over the top and lose sight of it. I don't work with those people. My website weeds those people out. I have people that really want to celebrate their togetherness. And there are a lot of people who want legal pieces of paper because they're going to be purchasing property, having children, and they want to protect their ass. I mean, I hate to be so non-romantic, but that's a real consideration.
Any other comments on that?
I think that we like to be inspired. You know, I don't know how many of you guys go to a wedding, but I cry almost every wedding I go to, even a couple of the tacky ones that Spike did.
Oh, they're very beautiful.
They're beautiful. So, I mean, that really is part of it, is to just to see this thing, to remind us. A lot of times it's just kind of, you know, you turn to your partner and kind of go, yeah, that's us, remember? And it helps us remember. So part of that is just kind of bringing it back. And then I think the other thing for me is this call to community. Mm-hmm. You know, you're being witnessed by the people who are important. You're asking for their support. And you're kind of creating a group of folks that you can call on when it's not as rosy as it is on that very day. So it's really, you know, to me, that's a big part of weddings is not talked about so much, but really want to hear from the people attending that they are part of this union.
Another question? Right here, Daniel. There's a couple over here.
I guess my question is for Anthony. So lately we've been considering doing an iPod DJ, even though we do have a DJ booked. So why would we continue with our DJ versus doing it ourselves?
Just like Spike said, fantastic question. Let me roll up my sleeves for this one. Okay, so everybody has an iPod now. Everybody has a smartphone. Everyone has their musical library, 50,000 songs that you just cannot live without, right? In your pocket right now, right? So with that advent, with that technological revolution, unfortunately, lots of people fancy themselves DJs. And not speaking about the couple, but just in general. So when you take that DJ, put him in an iPod, and stick him on a bass, plug him into a system, what have you, and play it, you're going to get the songs that you want played, right? Because you've made the playlist. One of the great things about having a human at the controls is that the flow of the night. We're looking at your dance floor constantly, and we're seeing, okay, the couple requested a lot of country music, but they're not dancing to the country music. What do we need to change to get people to dance? With an iPod playlist, it's not that easy, right? You have to go, press menu, flick through all the songs, yada, yada, yada. Another thing, if you'll just Google iPod wedding on YouTube, you'll see the myriad things that can happen, okay, with when you plug in an iPod to be your music. Your guests are going to walk up to it. They're going to want to change a song. You're going to be dancing to a very cool hip-hop song in the middle. They're going to say, I don't want to dance to this. And they're going to take it upon themselves to go up and change a song. You know, it's very hard. As a DJ, we're controlling 100 things at different times. We're controlling the volume. You know, at Greenbelt DJ, we actually mix live at your wedding. We're not just a wedding DJ that presses play on a laptop and we're done with it. So just like you go to a club or a lounge and the songs are interlaced together to keep the party going, that's one of the things that we personally bring to a table as a company. iPod can't do that. And that keeps your guests on the dance floor longer, keeps it, you know, a much more fun party, and just makes it sound a little more professional than an iPod. So while I have my own iPod, my own smartphone. I love technology. I love all that great stuff. But there is something to be said You know, you wouldn't set a camera up on a tripod, press the timer, and run back with your family, and that be your photographer for your wedding, right? So, like I said, there's hundreds of hilarious videos online if you just Google iPod DJ of what can go wrong. And you know, in addition, an iPod can't make announcements, right? So who's going to introduce you into the reception? Who's going to announce your first dance? Who's going to tell your guests, okay, dinner's ready? You know, someone's going to have to do that. And so that's just one of the things maybe to think through if you're considering that. Obviously, it's a lot cheaper. An iPod's, what, $250, something like that, $300, depending on what you get. So it's cheaper, but it's cheaper for a reason, just like, you know, buying a or doing all your photos hipstamatic or something is cheaper as well. So exactly. I think Corey has something to add.
Yeah, I mean, I think people forget, and because I had a destination wedding, I had to remember all this stuff, that if you're not going to have a DJ, then you need to find all your PA equipment and the microphones and the cords, and you have to have someone to set it up, which a lot of people don't know how to do, and then you have no sound system at all when by the time your wedding starts. But I mean, again, it's priorities. Do you want a killer dance party? If you do, I've been to weddings of all budgets, and you have to have a DJ. If a dance party is not important and you just want like a more cocktail style, Great Gatsby cocktail party, you know, then you would be fine with an iPod. But yeah, I mean, if you don't have a planner, you need a DJ because they're the ones that's going to keep you on your timeline and announce when, you know, things are happening. And they're really important. But again, it's where your priorities are.
There was another question over here, right? Right here. Oh, wait, 1 second.
I was wondering how each of you handles cell phones, guests
Great
and their
question.
Cell phones.
I mean, it just
Go for it, Spike.
So I have had a few, not enough, weddings where couples will have people put their cell phones away completely. Every single wedding I perform, any ceremony, if you work with me, you will see the very first thing at the top of the page, it says cell phone announcement. And I have my little standard joke I make. You've heard it a million times. I try to make it fresh. I'm like, hey, y'all. I'm the benevolent alpha. And I mean, because I will rip your head off and shit down your lungs if your phone goes off during a wedding I'm performing. But I don't say it like that. I say, hey, y'all. I say y'all because there's a lot of people visiting from outside of Texas. I say, y'all, if you've got your cell phone, even if you think you left it in your hotel in Paris, I want everybody to get them out, take a look, and silence them. And then I say, I've only had 3 phones go off in over 500 weddings, and I remember every one of them. And then I add some little spieling about like, and please, no texting or tweeting during the ceremony, but you can Instagram right after. You know, and then the grandmas are like, what's the Instagram? But it is, it's kind of like when you fly on Southwest or JetBlue and they give that, you know, they're going to give the corny spiel, but you're kind of listening, right? Yeah. So I have, shut them off, yeah.
Yeah, and the other thing is when people have their cell phones out, like, I mean, and you've seen this photo from other people's wedding on your Instagram feed, you're exiting and everybody has their phone in the aisle, and I'm like, like ducking around left to right, and I'm in the front, and then I'm running backwards, and I'm trying to do everything I can to keep those cell phones out of the frame, but man, it makes it really difficult. The new trend that I'm seeing is, and some people bring their iPads. That's really awesome to crop out. I can't tell you how many times I'm like, oh, with a red cover, really? It's like all you see in the picture. But anyway, the new trend I've seen is signs, like a chalkboard or something at the entrance that says, you know, this is a cell-free zone. We want you to be present. And the thing is, when you're behind a camera, you're behind your cell phone, you aren't present. And it's such a special day. It's a good thing to remind your guests you aren't paying attention and having fun and enjoying the moment and really being present because you've got your phone out.
We have time for about 1 or 2 more questions. Where did you go, Daniel?
So I guess over the course of the years, you meet a lot of people, and you would like them to be part of your community at your wedding, but most places only vit a certain number. So what's a recommendation for keeping the guest list down but not hurting feelings?
Steve?
Have a really big reception at Zilker Park afterwards. Buy a keg. You're good. Well, you know, all of us know that weddings are expensive. And, you know, there's, you know, when I got married, I had a bunch of people show up at the wedding that I didn't even know were there. They weren't invited. And they didn't go to the reception. The only way I knew they were there was because the wonderful photographer took pictures of everybody exiting. I'm like, what is that dude doing there? And, you know, like three or four people that just showed up. Happily, they didn't eat anything at the reception, so I was fine. Yeah, no, they're our friends from Ultimate, but... So, yeah, I mean, people are going to understand because this is expensive stuff. And unfortunately, it's the dividing line between inner circle and outer circle. But to find a way to celebrate in a way that fits and that can acknowledge this crossing into a new way of being with a larger number of people, whether it's at the wedding reception, wedding or reception specifically, or in some other party way, is probably, you know, like, hey, you're outer circle, but you're still, you know, part of my community, so let's do it this way in some other context before or after, as best I got.
We also had this problem. The first rule that my now husband and I made was, if we haven't talked to you in a year, you aren't invited. It sucks, but my husband's been in 20 bands and was thinking he was inviting like 100 old bandmates that never even met before. So you have to come up with some sort of rule that you both agree on that's like what, I'm not saying it has to be that rule, but just come up with something kind of big and basic. And then a lot of people will start asking you questions about your wedding, and it is so much better to be upfront about it. The minute they hear you're getting married, be like, it's going to be really small. We want to keep it nice and intimate. And they get what you're saying. You don't have to say it to them, because I think they kind of know, but you got to be upfront about it. If he's like, oh yeah, it's going to be awesome, it's going to be a huge party, then their feelings are going to be super hurt later. So I think it's a preemptive strike. The minute they ask about your wedding, if you know they're not invited, it's going to be a really small, intimate ceremony. We're just trying to keep the budget down. And all these things are true, of course. And what we did was we had a destination wedding. We invited 75 people. Not everybody can afford to travel, and 50 came. And we had an awesome, killer wedding with the night, like everything that we wanted. If we had had 200 people there, there's no way we would have been able to afford, you know, what we consider to be the perfect day. So just think about that. The smaller your wedding is, if you're having budget issues, the smaller your wedding is, the nicer it can be. So you're doing something nice for yourself.
We have time for just one more question.
Hi there. It was great to hear from you all tonight. So none of you are caterers, so you should be able to answer this question without any ego, and I think that's great. But one of the things that's very important to me and my fiance is eating good food. Mm-hmm. And we find it important to have good food at our wedding. So I was wondering, in your experience, what you've seen at weddings, when do you see people being very happy with the caterers and the food at their wedding?
Can I?
Go on.
There are a few caterers here in town that do a bang-up job. Everybody pretty much knows who they are. You know, Google rankings and stuff like this. So definitely Google them and check them out. Having said that, you're right. None of us are caterers. So to us, or to you, you said food is most important, right? So make sure that's at the top of your budget. In my experience, if you're having budget problems, don't do the tenderloin, do the chicken. People aren't going to remember the next day, did I have, you know, this amazing steak, or did I have this amazing chicken dish? Because these caterers can work wonders with budgets, or they really can. But they will, you know, you will remember your photographs, you will remember your dance party, you will remember your ceremony, or your guests will say, you know, that was such a fun party, fantastic, and that food was good too. That would be my answer.
this may not apply specifically to y'all because you sound like you want maybe some gourmet happenings, but we do live in Texas, and there are, I've seen great taco weddings. I've been at weddings catered by Freebirds that were awesome, really, because it's just like whatever the feel is that you're going for. Barbecue, I don't know how expensive barbecue is. I don't eat meat, but you can. And remember, we did, Steve and I were at this wedding. I must brag about this because it was so crazy over the top. I performed the first ever and so far only wedding at the Austin City Limits live at the Moody Theater, and there were probably like 300-400 people there. That's an expensive food budget, but a lot of the food was comfort food. They had this macaroni and cheese that was like, whoa! But I don't think macaroni and cheese is that expensive. The little sliders, they told me when I met them, the bulk of their budget went toward venue rental, as you might imagine, because that room was extremely special to them. The next part of their budget, as best as I could tell, went to music. They had a gospel choir, a mariachi band, and then a blues band, right? So they prioritized. If food is at the top of your list, there are some, yeah, check the ratings and reviews. I'm trying to not name companies by name. And I want to throw out one of the best weddings I went to all the way around. With some friends of mine, I co-officiated it, like in algebra, coefficient. And they opted to have a tres leches cake instead of a traditional cake. Oh, it was so good. So you are not locked into tradition. You're not locked.
I've seen a lot of really cool presentation lately, like really inventive stuff, like forks sticking out of things with balls, and I mean, ask your caterer about presentation. Yeah, I said
that.
I don't know. I had it at the W. It was delicious, though. But also, a lot of the caterers are leaning towards family style these days. I think it makes it more affordable. And I mean, as you'll notice from all the new restaurants, you go to Sway, you go to, I mean, it's like everybody's doing family style seating. So why not family style food? Well, they'll pass it around. I think it sort of builds a sense of community on your table. I think it makes for something memorable because people aren't used to it. And in a lot of situations, a plated dinner will actually be cheaper because they're assuming that you're not going to go back and oink out on the buffet. So you can oftentimes get really nicer high-end food. Am I offending anybody? to get a plated dinner, but you know, do your tastings and let them know what your expectations are, and if you want them to knock it out of the park, they will.
Beautiful.
And email us about recommendations if you need any.
Yeah, email us.
Yeah. Well, I would really like to thank Anthony and Steve and Spike and Corey for coming out this evening to talk to us about weddings. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And to all of you who are about to tie the knot, congratulations, and I hope it's absolutely wonderful. Please stick around and get some more pointers from our panelists. Come out next week when we're going to talk about microbrews in Austin and do some beer tastings. And there's even Jester King is a wedding venue, too, and we'll have representatives from Jester King, a local brewery. So, you know, two birds with one stone. Thank you to Matt Munoz, Amy Chambliss, and Hawk Mendenhall from the Cactus Cafe. And have a beautiful evening. Thank you.
Thanks so much for tuning into this podcast produced at KUT Radio in Austin, Texas. For more information on KUT programs and to support the station, go to KUT.org. And thanks again.